Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, September 28th, 2015. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Kathy McMorris-Rogers considered in line for House Majority Leader. Interim Idaho Legislative Group met over the summer with little public input to discuss state tax policy. Henriksen pleads guilty to Bakken oil field-related killings, and Palouse Paws provides companion animal visits. We'll have details on these stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. A Moscow man died in a head-on collision on the Pullman-Albion Road this morning. Police have identified the deceased as 38-year-old Daniel Lewis Pop. Pullman Police Commander Chris Tennant said the dead man was driving a black Honda eastbound when it hit a red westbound SUV in the middle of the road. Police identified the driver of the other SUV as 29-year-old Christopher Kaufman of Pullman. There's no information at this time as to Kaufman's condition. There were no passengers in either vehicle. Although 5th District U.S. Representative Kathy McMorris-Rogers of Spokane is one of three members of the House well-positioned to move up to House Majority Leader, she did not talk publicly about her plans over the weekend or today. Republicans are caucusing in D.C. trying to decide who should be Speaker of the House in light of Friday's announcement by Representative John Boehner of Ohio that he will leave the post and resign his House seat effective October 30th. Some pundits believe the Speaker position will go to Representative Kevin McCarthy of California, who currently is House Majority Leader. McMorris-Rogers released a letter to Republican colleagues today saying there would be a special meeting this afternoon to discuss strategies moving forward. The letter says the colleagues have had time to, quote, search in our hearts why we are here and how we can be more effective in this cause that unites us. The letter goes on to say, we must strengthen the role of this chamber by empowering members to do the important work needed and required for our country's future. This conference meeting is not about any one leader or group of members. A North Dakota Bakken oil field business owner and speculator pled guilty in federal court to murder charges in Spokane Friday. 36-year-old James Henriksen admitted ordering the killing of Doug Carlisle of Spokane in December 2013 and of Christopher K.C. Clark in North Dakota in 2012. U.S. District Judge Salvador Mendoza can accept the plea deal and sentence Henriksen to up to 40 years in prison. Mendoza set a sentencing date for December 18th. Henriksen said in court he contacted Associate Robert DeLeo, who contacted Tim Suckow of Spokane Valley, who killed Carlisle at his Spokane South Hill home, as Carlisle's wife hid in an upstairs closet. Detectives in Spokane called Henriksen in North Dakota the night of the murder, and Henriksen denied any involvement at that time, but said Carlisle owed him almost $2 million relating to a plan to purchase mineral rights on tribal oil-producing land in North Dakota. Henriksen's plea Friday followed three other guilty pleas by Henriksen Associates. DeLau pled guilty to 9 federal counts, including helping set up the murder for hire of Carlisle. Suckow pled guilty to pulling the trigger, and Lazaro Pacina pled guilty to racketeering for driving the getaway car after the Carlisle murder, but he said he did not know he was driving to and from a planned murder at the time. The Spokesman Review reports prosecutors will recommend a 30-year sentence for Suckow, a 14 to 17-year sentence for DeLau, and a 12-year sentence for Pacina. Henriksen also admitted to meeting Suckow in Watford City, North Dakota, and having him kill Clark in his truck shop in February 2012. Clark was the owner of a small trucking firm competing with Henriksen's business transporting for oil fields in the area. The spokesman review quoted Clark's mother saying, "The plea deals are not justice." Speaking of Henriksen, Jill Williams said, "He caused the death of two people. 40 years is not anywhere near enough." A group of Idaho state lawmakers have met repeatedly over the summer to discuss tax policy with little public notice. While interim legislative committees usually meet publicly with full public notice and with meetings streamed on the internet, this group traveled to Utah in July to meet with lawmakers there who passed a modified flat tax bill about 10 years ago. The Spokesman Review reports House Speaker Scott Bedke of Oakley said Republican and minority leaders of both houses, plus tax committee chairs, were invited to the Utah meeting, although the minority leaders did not go. All of those invited to the Utah meeting later attended two meetings on the subject back in Idaho later in the summer. Bedke told the paper, "It's not an interim committee per se, it's more of an ad hoc working group." Bedke said after the two leadership meetings, the two tax committee chairs put together another ad hoc group of legislators, which has held one meeting on tax policy. That meeting was announced on a paper notice posted at the state capitol. Forest Service Chief Thomas Tidwell has appointed Genevieve Masters as Umatilla National Forest Supervisor. Most of the forest is located in northeastern Oregon, although its 1.4 million acres extends into southeastern Washington. Masters is deputy supervisor of the Humboldt-Toyabe National Forest in Nevada and has worked as acting deputy forest supervisor on the Pike and San Isabel National Forest and the Cimarron and Comanche National Grasslands. Masters was also wildlife biologist and district range wildlife and watershed staff officer on the Tonto National Forest in Arizona. The Umatilla National Forest headquarters is in Pendleton. Chief Tidwell also named Rodney Smolden as Colville National Forest Supervisor in northeastern Washington. Smolden is currently the district ranger for the Three Rivers Ranger District of the Colville Forest. Smolden is a native of eastern Washington and received a Recreation and Leisure Services degree from Eastern Washington University in 1985. He has also served as a recreation program manager on the Klamath National Forest in California and a district ranger on the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest in central Washington. Accused bank robber Ibrahim E. Arar appeared in Second District Court Friday in Moscow and was charged with robbery, which carries a penalty of 5 years to life in prison plus a $50,000 fine. Magistrate William Hamlet appointed County Coroner Kathy Maybutt as Arar's public defender. Maybutt is also an attorney. The Daily News reported when Hamlet asked Arar if he had an attorney, he replied, "My wife, she contacted somebody, but I don't think we can afford that. I talked to my wife this morning and she's leaving me, so I guess it doesn't really matter." Hamlet set bond at $100,000. Moscow police arrested the 31-year-old Arar Thursday in connection with the September 17th bank robbery at the East Side Wells Fargo Bank branch on Blaine Street in Moscow. Police booked him into the Latah County Jail on robbery and grand theft charges following a week-long investigation. The robbery occurred the afternoon of Friday, September 17th. A probable cause affidavit written by Moscow Police Detective Tyson Barrett says the amount the robber got away with was $2,335. The court documents also say Arar was identified by surveillance video as the man who lost $1,900 gambling at Mr. Z's casino in Pullman the day after the robbery. The documents also say Arar and his wife were having financial difficulties and owed $12,000 to the Internal Revenue Service and $2,900 to a friend. A story which aired Friday evening incorrectly stated the day of the arraignment, which was Friday. The National Transportation and Safety Board reports the ride the Ducks amphibious vehicle, which suddenly veered into oncoming traffic and collided with a charter bus carrying college students in Seattle Thursday, did not have a recommended axle repair. A fifth person who was riding in the charter bus, which was hit on the Aurora Bridge last week, died at Harborview Medical Center yesterday. The victim was identified as a 20-year-old woman. All five people who died were among 45 North Seattle college students on the bus who were on an outing taking in the sights around Seattle. The safety board said Ride the Ducks International warned franchises about the possibility of axle failure on the amphibious vehicles 2 years ago and recommended a specific repair or increased monitoring. NTSB member Earl Wiener said at a news conference this particular duck had not had the fix. The Ride the Duck tours use amphibious vehicles designed for military use, decorated as a party on wheels. Drivers are responsible for announcing sights, cueing music, and entertaining even while driving around the city. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. On-duty police in Washington have killed 213 people in the state since 2005, and 16% of those were unarmed during their encounter with police. A comprehensive report on police killings in the state by the Seattle Times has found since the legislature passed a law in 1986 preventing the prosecution of police who kill in the line of duty unless they did not act in good faith or with malice, state or county prosecutors have filed charges against only one police officer for a killing, and he was found not guilty by a jury. That was the second-degree murder prosecution against Everett police officer Troy Meade, who shot and killed 51-year-old Niles Meservey in 2009. Meade opened fire and killed Meservey through the back window of Meservey's car after he refused to get out of his car in a parking lot. Meade was fired by the Everett Police Department for violating department rules on deadly force. Federal prosecutors convicted Spokane police officer Carl Thompson Jr. of excessive force for the 2006 death of 36-year-old disabled janitor Otto Zem in a Division Street convenience store only after Spokane County prosecutor Steve Tucker declined to file charges. Zem died 2 days after Thompson tasered and beat him, and then, with the help of other officers, hogtied him face down on the floor of the Zip Trip store and placed a medical rebreather mask over his face without hooking it up to oxygen, as is done with rebreather masks. The Times reports police in Washington killed an average of 16 people per year between 2005 and 2009. That average has increased to 27 per year between 2010 and 2014. Of the 213 killed during that period, 210 were male. 10% of those killed were black, while the population of Washington is 3.6% black. Those killed who did not have a weapon were 15% black. Spokane city officials won't immediately launch a search for a replacement for Police Chief Frank Straub, who resigned this week. The spokesman review spoke to five city council members who indicated they might prefer a regional or local search for a new chief. Straub, who came to Spokane after a rocky tenure at a similar top policing job as public safety director in Indianapolis, was asked to resign by Mayor David Condon because he moved two highly paid police spokeswomen to other departments but kept paying their salaries from the police department budget. There were also complaints about Straub's abrasive, belittling management style. Straub will not immediately leave city employment. He will continue earning his $179,000 salary until the end of the year in the city's legal department. Straub was handpicked by Condon in 2012 to reform the Spokane Police Force, who had a longtime reputation for brutality and killings. In an interview after his firing, Straub told the Spokesman Review he embraced federal Justice Department oversight of the department and a shift to more precinct-based community policing. He said, "My job was to come in, make changes, put things in place, build a strong foundation. At some point, I was always going to leave." The resignation came after the Lieutenants and Captains Association complained to the mayor about Straub's brusque leadership style. The union said in a statement last week they were pleased with the mayor's request for his resignation because there were, quote, serious workplace issues that, if allowed to continue, jeopardized the internal operations of our agency moving forward. The other union, which represents the police force's rank and file, supported Straub in the end. Spokane Police Guild President John Gately said in a statement he treated our members fairly and worked with the guild on issues that impacted our members. The two unions had opposite views of former police chief Ann Kirkpatrick, who served as Spokane's first female police chief immediately prior to Straub. The Spokesman Review reports the Police Guild consistently criticized her, while the Lieutenants and Captains Association supported her. Kirkpatrick was also hired to be a reformer. One of the top campaigners for police reform in the city, civil rights attorney Breanne Beggs, said internal candidates for the next police chief should be compared to a nationwide pool. The interim police chief is 55-year-old Assistant Police Chief Rick Dobro, a 21-year veteran with the department. Dobro said he is not angling for the permanent position, but will take it if the mayor asks him to. City Council President Ben Stuckart said, "Right now, what's really important is stability. Rick's perfect. He's been on the force. He has the trust of lieutenants and captains." The group Palouse Paws is providing visits by dogs to help comfort people in hospitals and assisted living facilities in the Moscow area. I spoke to Renee Piper of Palouse Paws Saturday during the Farmers Market broadcast.
Okay, and the name of the group is Palouse Paws with a Cause, Comfort Animal Visitation Program. What's your name?
Hi, I'm Renee Piper.
Renee, I'm Lee. And so these are not really service animals in the normal sense that they don't lead blind people around. This is for comfort, right? So.
That's correct. We actually provide comfort to folks in nursing homes, or we do hospital visitations. We've been doing a lot with the kids in the community. So our dogs here are just to provide comfort and make people smile.
Okay, yeah, and I imagine if I was sick in the hospital or really lonely in an old folks' home, I'd would like a friendly puppy to come up, right? Do they lick people's faces?
Well, we don't like them to lick people's faces. I know a lot of the dogs like that, but, you know, it's just a good way to make people feel happy. It's, yeah. You know, these guys just come up to them and want to be petted, and it's just a lot of people are sad when it comes to those type of environments, so our dogs are just out there to help them, make them feel better.
Yeah. How do the dogs feel about it? I mean, like being brought in to, you know, comfort these people? Are some of the dogs more friendly and up to the task than others? And this one looks a little sad over there or insecure.
Well, actually, to become a comfort dog program, they go through an organization called Pet Partners. So they have to meet a certain criteria to be able to become part of a comfort animal program. All of these animals here today actually have wonderful dispositions, and they all want to be loved on. So, yes, sometimes, like Enzo today, that's in our crate, does not want to be loved on today. So we decided to put him in timeout.
Oh, really? Yeah. Did he do something that indicated that? Or, did he actually go past a line of bad behavior, or did he just sort of signal or telegraph to you that he wasn't up for it today?
Yeah, Enzo, just his way of telling me that he doesn't want to do some comfort work today is just by, he wants to just lay on his mom, and he gives me that look like, do I really have to do this today? So, you know, I don't like to force that upon our animals if they don't want to do the work today. So that's why Enzo's in his crate.
Yeah, it seems with dogs, they sort of smile sometimes, you know, when they hold their mouth open.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, we're talking Renee with Palouse Paws. Are you raising money for the program? How does this work? Is it a nonprofit thing?
Yes, we are a nonprofit organization. We've been very fortunate with just the community coming in and helping us grow. We've been very, very fortunate with just giving us contributions to operate.
So is it usually the owners of the pet animals that are responsible for bringing them to the hospital or home or wherever they go and responsible for grooming and stuff, or are there people from the organization that take care of that?
The handler does all of this on their own.
Which is the owner.
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Although the dogs may not look at it as their owner.
Right. Yeah, that's funny.
Do you guys work with cats or any other animals?
Actually, we do have a guinea pig in and we all have one cat.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Just one cat. All the cats in Moscow.
I know. We would love to have more cats. So if people want to become part of the program, they need to check us out. We're always at Farmers Market, and my brochure's at all of the veterinarian clinics in town, so it's a good way to contact me.
Okay. And what are the things that you look for in the disposition? Like, if an animal gets rejected from the program, why would that be?
To become part of a pet partner organization, they need to have some basic dog obedience skills. For instance, sit, stay, down. They need to be able to walk on a leash. But it needs to be a team. So we need to have a handler that wants to do the work, but also we want the dog to be able to want to do the work. The dog has got to be able to want to be loved on, hugged. We work with all levels of ages. So, they need to be able to handle people petting them nonstop or kids crawling on them. So the dog has definitely got to want to be comforted. So that's probably our main reason, primary reason for them to want to become part of the program.
Yeah. And with Endo, it might have been maybe something having to do with the farmer's market, just too many people all at once, right? Well, you don't know. I'm talking about Endo, the one dog.
Enzo. Yeah, I think he's just having a bad day.
Aww.
Yeah, they're little people themselves. Maybe he didn't want to do his comfort work today, and that's okay.
Okay. Well, we're with Renee with Palouse Paws, and they are by the fountain in Friendship Square until 1 p.m. today with, it looks like, at least 6 dogs. And they all look very friendly and clean.
Yeah, please come on down and get some puppy love.
All right. Thank you, Renee.
You're welcome.
That was Renee Piper of Palouse Paws speaking during the Saturday Farmers Market broadcast on KRFP. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Coming up next, a edition of Eat the Airwaves, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. The weather for the Moscow Pullman area is mostly clear through Thursday, low 35 tonight. High 76 tomorrow, 80 on Wednesday, 74 on Thursday, lows 41 Tuesday night, 46 Wednesday night, partly cloudy, low 46 Thursday night, mostly sunny Friday, high 71. Currently at the Pullman Moscow Regional Airport, fair skies, 69 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a KRFP member. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843, or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial.